Hello, everybody. I'm Tom Dorsey.
And I'm Tommy Doyle.
My buddy, Tommy Doyle. One of the younger people in here at DWA, but also one of the smartest. I can tell you that much. I always enjoy doing these with you, Tommy. A lot of stuff to talk about here lately. And one of the things that you hear in the media is this Kim Jong-un, did I say it right, North Korea?
Close enough.
Well, the media, they want to blow everything up as much as they possibly can. But when you look at reality, how does the market react to what's going on in North Korea? It's shaking it off.
Yeah.
No big deal. But the media has nothing to hype, so they take that and they're going to hype that to the nth degree. But when you think about the old market adage, years ago, these old-timers were dead right. The market likes to climb a wall of worry.
That's right.
So the more worry that throws out there, the more worry there is, the more I can see this market climbing.
Unless something does actually happen, that might cause a real stir.
When what?
If something really does happen, that might cause a stir.
Yeah, but then again, if something really does happen, that would be the type of thing that takes the market down for a day. If you think back to when John Kennedy was assassinated in Texas, that caused the market to go down for a day or two. But that was it, and it came back.
Mm-hmm.
You would have thought that would have caused the market to stay down and be negative for a good while, but it didn't. It shrugged it off and came right back.
Yep.
So things aren't always what they seem, but like Mike Burke, my old mentor, used to tell me, the market will do what it wants to do. It's not going to do what the media wants it to do.
What it should do.
What it should do, exactly, what it should do, and what you see on CNBC. Remember, everyone has an agenda. There are no disinterested parties on Wall Street. So Mike Burke also told me one time, he said, Tom, he said, everything that's written about the market in the media is written to make you do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
That's why we got charts.
That's exactly right. So where we stand today, Tommy, I mean, we got some interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
S&P 500 in September.
First week of September.
Yeah, as I mentioned on our webcast yesterday, that this is the Ides of September, right?
That's right.
The Ides of September, it might be Marcus Aurelius said that.
Marcus Aurelius, yeah.
Or would it be Caesar?
Could have been. I'll have to fact check that. I don't want to be wrong.
Now, see, you're supposed to tell me it's the Ides of March.
Ides of March.
That's upon you. That's Caesar.
Yeah, that's the movie.
Is there a movie?
Yeah, I think so, with George Clooney and Ryan Gosling a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Something like that.
I didn't know that.
Political movie.
Political movie?
Political movie.
I would have figured it. So September is usually a scary month. And September and October, what it used to be many, many years ago was October was the month that was the worst of the year. And somehow it always played out that way. So when we come in here and we look at September, and I'm looking at this car you got in your hand. What, Tommy, you drive me crazy. Is that a mouse?
It is a mouse.
What kind of car is that?
It's a Lamborghini. You know I'm a car guy.
It's a Lamborghini. I see the lights flashing on this thing.
Everybody thinks I'm playing around all day, but I'm usually just doing work.
So that's a mouse.
That's a mouse.
I love it. That's cool. I didn't realize you could get anything but your normal mouse. At any rate, let's look at September. September has usually been a pretty tough month. So if you look at the 1980s, if you average out September's, down 1.25%.
For the S&P.
For the S&P 500.
Yep.
Exactly. In the 1990s, the average was down 0.83.
Up.
Oh, excuse me. Did it say up? Yeah, up. That's my minus that I put by it here. And in the 00s, 2000s, average is down 2.8%.
And that 2000s is from 2000, 2009, not 2010 on. Things have been negative. There have been some couple of bright spots, like you and I were talking about in the mid-90s right before the dot-com. And then, you know, you were walking me through the 1980s before I was even a thought in my parents' mind.
That's right. Exactly. Before you were around on this earth, the 1980s were happening and all hell was breaking loose. When you think about the 1980s, I look back and I know every year of it is so clear to me. When I look at 1982 is when the bullish percent index breaks four tops and takes off. And I mean, it was like not a 3-standard deviation move, but a 10-standard deviation move. You couldn't stop this market. And that reminds me of something I want to speak about in a moment. In 1981, so 1980 you had an up September. 1981 you had a down 5.38% in September. That was before the market took before the market took off in 1982. I'm looking at 1980 with all these numbers. Actually, it was 1982 in August when the market took off. 1981, the S&P was down 5.38%, but that was a misnomer. The big stocks, S&P 500, were down in 1981. However, the small stocks, the secondaries, were up 20% before the big stocks took off.
That kind of reminds me of last year when we saw large cap stuff go down. You had small caps and large value do exceptionally well. And then by August, everyone started saying, oh, stocks are back. Well, they were there. They were just small caps, not necessarily large caps like we've seen this year. Large growth has been the place to be.
That's it. Large growth has been it. I mean, if you have been in large growth, you're doing poorly. If you were in the SML, which is the Standard & Poor's 600, let's say you were in the 600 value, and there's so many value managers out there, you actually are down for the year now.
Yep. And going back over time, whether, you know, in this thing that we just looked at, we went back from 2009 to 1980, and their average performance for the S&P 500 over that time was down 90 basis points. You know, you look at large cap stocks in general using the S&P 500 index from our historical September returns that we put in that prospecting piece last week, and it's down about 1%. So large cap stocks, you can expect maybe on average down 1% for the month of September.
Well, how do we play this September then? This September's got everything you could possibly want. You've got the North Korean situation, which adds more uncertainty to the market, which the market loves. You've got the hurricanes. We just went through one in Texas. We're about to get one here in Florida.
Yep, Irma.
Which makes me think about owning orange juice. Why weren't we doing this a few days ago? I mean, it would be quite clear. The hurricane comes to Florida. Florida's the orange juice state. That's going to devastate the orange juice crop. Yeah. Buy orange juice.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it today until Min mentioned what orange juice had done the last few days. You were long orange juice already.
I was.
You didn't tell me.
It's difficult because part of you wants to say, you know, that's going to be really tough for people that live in Florida and you feel bad. And then the other part of you is, you know, looking at what opportunities are there and how can you help. So it gets to be a little bit of a sticky situation. But, yeah, I mean, no supply. That means demand's going to be high for orange juice. No more Tropicana in the stores. Everyone's going to be fighting for it just like milk and bread.
Absolutely. You know, what else can you think about there? Oil, actually gasoline.
Yeah.
Price of gasoline has been going up.
We've seen crude oil fall while the gasoline has gone up. And we've experienced
gasoline's
that.
All about refining.
Yep.
And, you know, we haven't built a new refinery, I think, in America in the last 30 years. So they're operating with old equipment there. Very expensive to refine. Mm-hmm. So gasoline is a refining type of thing. It's not necessarily the oil part.
Yeah, we've in Texas, those refineries, some of those were shut down, and you know, we're experiencing that. I'm a little upset about that because my gas prices are going up here in Virginia. That's back to Econ 101, supply and demand.
That's exactly right. I just paid for my Lexus, which I have to put high test in.
Yep.
$3.60 for a gallon.
Yeah. It's crazy. You got to join a Costco or Sam's Club. That's what I just did. So I can get cheaper gas.
Is that right?
I don't shop there because I don't eat that much food. But, hey, I'm going to go get gas there because it's 30 cents cheaper.
I love it. So what else have we got here? We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
We've also got big dispersions in the month of September between the best and the worst. And that's what that prospecting piece went over. So last year, the dispersion was between biotech, biomedics index was up 10% in the month of September, and restaurants suffered down almost 5%. So, you know, we can look to the DWA group matrix. We can look to see where leadership trends have developed so far this year. You know, we're seeing it continue to be in technology. We're continuing to see healthcare improve. We've seen utilities pop here recently. You know, if we're looking at the spiders, broad sector funds, you know, XLU is now up 13.12% on the year, and that's outpacing the S&P SPY up around 10%. So it's an interesting market, and it kind of depends on factors, you know, that we've also talked about. If you're looking at momentum factors like the DWA sectors from with power shares, some of those returns look even better. So it's an interesting way to play. There's a lot of stuff to be looking at. You could look at the bullish percents for some of these sectors change, whether they're in column of O's or column of X's. We've seen the indicator itself, the BP and X's, That measures...
I'll talk about that for a second. For people that don't understand, what does that mean, BP?
The bullish percent is the BP indicator. So it's measuring the percent of stocks on a point and figure buy signal.
And what's a point and figure buy signal?
A column of X's exceeding above the previous column.
Yeah,
of
those
X's.
Aren't initiated to this. Point and figure charting is like made up of X's and O's, which makes it so simple and easy to understand. So when you when the stock is rising or whatever you're looking at is rising, it's in X's, rising in X's. When it exceeds a previous top or previous column of X's, that's a buy signal. Excuse me. Conversely, the same thing, when it's going down, it's in a column of O's, and exceeding a previous column of O's would be a sell signal. That's the beauty of point and figure charting. It's so simple, straightforward, and it's not left up to your subjectivity.
Right.
It is either a buy signal or a sell signal, no other discussion. And you don't get that with any other technical analysis either.
That's right. And so the BP and X's chart is a little bit different than your typical BP chart, because it's just measuring the number of Dorsey Wright sectors, or DWA groups, as you may see them referred to at, on the website, that are in a column of X's.
Okay, now like we just mentioned a point figure chart. In a column of X's would suggest what you're looking at is rising.
Is rising, increasing, improving.
Right, and these are very long term that we're looking at, so now it's just moved over into X's, so things are improving now.
That's right. So we saw it fall just in the month of August. We saw that number for the number of DWA groups that were in a column of X's, so improving on their bullish percent charts, was up at 27. So 27 of the 40 were in a column of X's. And we saw that fall all the way down to just 4. And with last week's action, we saw that reverse up, and now it's at 7. And so that's telling us that there's some opportunities there. On the Dorsey Wright website, the ticker is BP in X's, just like it sounds.
Yeah, bullish percent BP, INXS, if you're looking at our system. And while we're talking to you, I would highly recommend that you pull these charts up.
And if you look
Let's look across, though. Let's look back and see where we were in September of 2016. September of 2016, we were at a top and just reversing over in December, came in December.
Yep.
How about 2015? Where were we there? September, we had just reversed up from a bottom, 2015. 2014, you were at a – you basically were in a column of X's at a top, and it reversed over. So it's like every year, one's top, one's bottom.
Yep.
We're at the bottom now. Very good sign.
And you can see which of these sectors are in a column of X's on the website as well. If you look under – at the very top, you can go under the Indicators tab, and then you click on Bell Curves. And that is going to default to show you the 40 DWA groups on their bell curve looking at the bullish percent indicator. And right now, we're seeing things like electric utilities, forest paper products, telephone, metals non-ferrous, biotech, protection and safety, precious metals. You know, we talked about a couple weeks ago, we saw a lot of the gold charts break out. You're seeing some other metals do well. So that bullish percent was down in you know, the low 20s, and now that's up above 30, 35 range. So.
And if you look at this bell curve of these sectors, it's perfectly normal.
Yep.
Most things are in the center. Some stuff's too high. Some stuff is too low. Like oil, very low. Oil service, oil companies, very, very low. Retailing, extremely low.
Extremely low.
And what we just saw the other day, precious metals is still close to a bottom. When you look at a normal distribution like that, you want to buy things that are on the oversold side of the ledger. So that's what you'd be looking at here is oil. Some of the things that just don't look good, you'd want to be buying those.
We'd want to refer to that point and figure chart. If it's not on a buy signal, it's continuing to show that supply
is in
control.
Buying these on a normal distribution on a bell curve.
Yeah.
If you're looking at a bell curve and you're saying, let's lay the whole market out on a bell curve, where does everything lie? Do you want to buy things that are on the oversold side of the ledger or the overbought side of the ledger?
Oversold.
Oversold side, when you're thinking about the normal distribution. Mm-hmm. For us, we would look at the chart. Now, something may be overbought and become even more overbought.
Right.
But when you look at a normal distribution like this, everything is perfectly as normal as could possibly be.
And what's interesting with that, a good example of that is the precious metals. If you went back to August, say a month ago, so if you went back to August 6th, that was a Sunday, so we'll go back to August 7th. Precious metals was down in a column of O's on its bullish percent chart in between 22 and 26. Mm-hmm. That was as oversold as oil service was.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today, as of yesterday's close, so September of 2017, September 5th. And now, where do you see precious metals? You see it in a column of X's. And on this point and figure chart, the bullish percent level is now between 34 and 36%.
Interesting. Now, take a look at this. This is the implied momentum bell curve.
Now, before we get into that, we got to tell people how to find that. We get a ton of questions on how to find this,
okay,
where it is. So if you are on the platform on Dorsey Wright website, you can go under your dashboard, and you can go to one of your welcome screens that you have set up. If you don't have them set up, this is a good opportunity for you to take advantage of that so you can look at this implied momentum bell curve. You can add the widget called Links of Interest is where it's hidden. And then we can add the implied momentum bell curve to that. And that's when we're able to see the implied momentum bell curve for the S&P 500.
To me, this is one of the most important things that you can possibly look at. The concept comes from the late, great Jim Yates. And when you think about every single stock that trades out there, it's on a normal distribution. It's where Bollinger gets his bands, which is a normal distribution. It's where on the right-hand side of all of our charts, you'll see the bell curve there, top, median, and bottom. And by taking each individual stock and where it is on its own normal distribution, and if you don't know what normal distribution is, Google it and learn what that bell curve is all about. Then when you place that company under its where it is on its own bell curve, under the big S&P bell curve, then you see all the symbols that make up that bell curve, and it's the most beautiful way to look at the stock market. So you can see the market right now is very normal, almost perfectly normal, and everything is green. Mostly, the majority of things are green, which means the 10-day relative strength is positive, and it suggests to me that we're likely to see higher prices in the overall market. When I look to the left-hand side and you say, okay, what's down on the left-hand side, I see stocks like Apache, oil company. CMG is the
Chipotle.
Yeah, that's been all a disappointment.
Disappointment, yeah.
On that
and
Chipotle.
So when you
but
say
notice
you
where
expect
it is.
Higher prices, that means that we should see this picture shift to the right.
Exactly. Shift more to the right-hand side.
And now we're talking about things
so
that are now oversold.
Here's a question for you. I'll be Mr. Wizard, like the old days.
All right.
And you'll be the kid from school.
There we go.
So when you look at what we would call zone one, because a normal distribution is made up of six standard deviations, so we don't scare people, we call them zones. Mm-hmm. If you look at zone one, what would be the right strategy
on a
stock that's in zone one?
You want to look at ones that have positive 10-day.
Okay.
So you want to look at the green ones. So you could look at things like your Apache, like Hasbro, HAS.
But what's the strategy?
You buy them when they're in zone one because they're oversold.
But what's the strategy? How do I want to buy them? There's a lot of ways that you can buy things. Well, what I want to do is I want to take advantage of their oversold nature.
Correct.
When the 10-day relative strength turns positive and it's green, it suggests to me, especially when it's that oversold, that I could buy stock, sell call. It'd be one thing I could do. I could buy calls there. Instead of even owning the stock, something that oversold, the best play would be possibly just buying the calls. Pretty simple. Don't ever buy any more calls than you would have an appetite for round lots of stock. You could also sell uncovered puts, which is something that I do.
I know it is.
I sell uncovered puts, but really, what's the difference between an uncovered put and a covered right?
The same thing.
Same thing, exactly. They're synonymous. So if you embrace a covered right, then you also should embrace an uncovered put. That's another strategy that you could use here.
A little riskier.
Well, it's not more risky than doing a covered right.
Right, but if it's naked.
No, if it's naked, it's the same thing. That's why this is like Mr. Wizard. I'm going to show you how to create vacuum. We're going to suck an egg down the bottom now. If those of you that have any age tree out there, remember Mr. Wizard. Or look him up, Google Mr. Wizard.
You put the candle in the bottle?
Yeah, you put the candle in the bottle and suck the egg down. And he teaches you about vacuum.
Yeah.
But when you think about an uncovered put, stock is at 100. I sell a put. What does that do? That gives the buyer the right to put me stock at 100.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to stand ready to buy at 100. I'm what you would call an insurance company. I'm underwriting your Mercedes that you just sold me.
And you're taking the premium.
And I'm taking in that premium. So they have to pay me a premium. So let's say they pay me $5. And then the stock goes to zero. And he makes me buy the stock at 100.
Yep.
Okay? But I bought the... He makes me buy the stock at 100.
Mm-hmm.
So my loss is how much? I took in 5 points premium, right?
Right,
95. That was a payment of hit for my insurance.
Yep.
The stock had an accident. The car was totaled out. I lost 100, but I made 5 on the premium.
So
I lost 95. Let's say I did the other thing. Let's do something that's considered more safe. If I bought the stock at 100 and I sold the 100 call for 5, my cost basis is 95, right?
Right.
And if the stock goes to zero,
lose 95.
I lose 95. Same thing. So an uncovered put is synonymous with, or you could say, a cash-covered uncovered put.
Mm-hmm.
So you had cash available to buy the stock if you had to, is the same thing as a covered right.
Yep.
So you have to think about what's the right strategies here. When you think about, let's say the market does sell off big time here. Let's say September turns out to be a rout, and the market, the S&P is down 10%. What's going to increase if the market goes down 10%?
Volatility.
What's the biggest component of an option premium?
Volatility,
which means options will expand in premium. Therefore, the right strategy at that point is going to be what?
Options.
Covered right. Buy stock, sell call.
Buy stock, sell call.
This is fun, isn't it?
It is. Continuing to learn in that regard. That's my next thing. You taught me futures, taught me commodities. Options is next on the agenda.
Options are next, and they're pretty simple. It's just arithmetic. So what did we want to cover next? We had some. Well, we were going to look at the matrix that you had here, the sector matrix. Remember that one with all the colors? I said put it on the bottom. Oh, you might have lost it.
Might have lost it. You mean the DW? Oh, the quilt.
Yeah, the quilt.
Okay.
What's interesting about this quilt is you can put this together. Explain how you can put it together on our platform.
Similar to the implied momentum bell curve, it's under the links of interest widget. So you got to go back to your dashboard.
Go to links of interest. Then what?
Then you want to add the create a quilt link in there. And then you click on it. And you can put in different symbols. So some things that I have saved are the broad sectors using the spiders or the Dorsey Wright broad sectors, the momentum factor overlaid on those broad sectors. And you see how they perform year over year for the past 10 years, if there's data for it. So
what do you have up here now?
So what I have here is the State Street broad sectors.
Very colorful.
Very colorful, so I can see which ones. You can see S&P kind of floats in throughout the middle, just like it kind of maybe should.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing is technology, healthcare, utilities, basic materials, and consumer discretionary outperform this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing energy, real estate, financials. I'm seeing industrials, and I'm seeing consumer staples lag.
One of the things that we've found over the years by looking at this is when you look at something that's on the bottom and it's underperformed worse than anything else, it ends up on the top the next year, doesn't it?
We did that with
not every time, but with
the factors. And not every time, that's true. You could see years where it stays up there for 1, 2, 3 years or stays at the bottom 1, 2, 3 years. But yeah, that is certainly a strategy that someone could implement as a contrarian. You know, last year you would have said, you know, the worst performing sector was healthcare. And one of the best performing sectors this year
is healthcare.
Last year, one of the best performing sectors, in fact, the best performing sector, we saw it in Dolly, we saw it performance using ETFs as proxies, was energy. What's the worst performing sector this year?
Energy. Go back a few years.
You can go back to 2009, 2010. You had utilities down at the bottom. 2011 comes, volatility increases, sector leadership narrows. What's the best performing?
Utilities. It's so amazing when you look at this, and I want you all to do this. Go on our site and create your quilt. Have it already made so you can show this to clients, see it yourself, and you'll be amazed at what this can do for you.
Mm-hmm. You know, we track it. I personally track the size and style boxes. I look at the Dorsey Wright sectors. I look at smart beta factors or international factors. You know, international markets we continue to talk about. You can look at, say, the developed market factors, and, you know, developed momentum is doing the best this year, up almost 23.5%, 24%. So it's very cool to see these things change. see where your benchmark kind of reacts or behaves within the inventory that you put in there.
It is incredibly interesting. Well, do you have anything else you want to cover? Oh, next week. Next week, I want you all to definitely tune in. Kim Mahan is going to be interviewed by us here, and she is one fantastic lady. She's the CEO of Max Potential, M-A-X-X Potential. One sharp lady. She's under, well, she, her whole company is technology. And on Monday nights, she plays on my pool league. So whenever we get to go play pool on Monday nights, I bend her ear for a couple of hours on technology.
Okay.
What's going on? What can we expect? What are we going to see in the future? What will Alexa ultimately bring to us? These kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an expert on how to learn,
okay,
which is something we're going to talk about too next week. So I want you to tune in. Get anybody else that you'd like to listen to this tune in. Kim Mahan is one fantastic lady, CEO of Max Potential. Going to be here next Wednesday.
Another thing, keep in mind, Broker Institute coming up.
Yes, that's going to be in November, first week.
8th through the 10th.
8th through the 10th.
Here at the Jefferson Hotel. Newly 5-star awarded, so we're all excited about that.
We limit that to 100, so if you're going to get into it, you better call now.
And before September 15th, you get the discount.
Yep.
Might as well do it.
Okay. Then we'll see you next week with Kim Mahan.